Hello and welcome back to the Paranormal Podcast. I'm Dan Pacella, co-founder, lead investigator, Orange County, New York, Paranormal. And thank you for joining us today. If you're new to the festivities, welcome. We have a lot of new listeners every week, it seems like, so this is great. Thank you all if you're new to this. If you have been with us, thank you so much for sticking around and for tuning in. It's been interesting to watch where our audience is coming from. A lot of downloads. Last time I checked, folks from 43 different states have downloaded an episode or two of the podcast. So for all of you who are new to the festivities, thank you so much. And for all of you who've been here, thank you for the continued support. If you are new to the Paranormal Podcast, please subscribe, rate, and review on the podcast platform you are listening to us on. There is also a video version of this on our YouTube channel and on Facebook, where we, you know, just the same exact thing. It's just, if you want to see my face, you can check us out there as well. If you do check us out on Facebook or YouTube, please make sure to follow us, like, subscribe. And if you're on YouTube, hit the bell icon. That way you'll be notified of all of the videos that we publish, podcast episodes, and the investigation episodes. And today we're going to talk about the most recent investigation episode as we talk about some of the amazing experiences that we had, and we'll be doing that in the second half of today's episode. But before we talk about that, I want to talk about something that a recent event that we did really made me think about, not for the first time overall, but probably for the first time, you know, directly. Like, you subconsciously think about things when you investigate the paranormal. But the recent live event we did for the Gans House evidence reveal got me to really put down my thoughts on the methodology of something that we don't talk a lot about because of how rare of an experience it is. And that's what we're going to talk about in today's episode. So as I said before, recently we did a live evidence reveal of what we captured at the Gans House investigation. And this was actually broadcast. And we did it as a fundraiser for the Sharon Historical Society and Museum. And we did it not only in person, but also they ran their program over Zoom. Had folks from 22 different states tuning in, which was fantastic. And a lot of great questions, a lot of interaction. I will put the YouTube link to that presentation in the description. So if you're interested, you can check that out. But it was interesting because before we talked about the evidence we captured, we had to talk about the fact that we were the first ever paranormal group or person to ever investigate that location. And that's such a rare thing, to be the absolute first people in. And we're not the first to publish. We've been the first to publish. That's different. First to investigate, first to publish, two different things. No psychics or mediums had been in there. Nothing. The only other time that we could think of in our entire experience, 70 plus investigations since we became this organization, was the Seneca Falls Machines Building. It's the only time that we were the first folks to ever get a chance to do a paranormal investigation of any kind in a place. And it's extremely rare, but it also presents some really unique challenges. So first and foremost, no previous investigations means no previous evidence to go off of. And that is a handicap, if you think about it. And most of the places we go, as I said, I can only think of one other, have some kind of record, whether that evidence has been published or not, notwithstanding, because there's a good chance that the owners, staff, or workers of a location have at least seen some of what a previous investigation captured, or walked around with a psychic medium and got some of the story from them. But when you are the first people to ever do this in a place, there's nothing to go off of. There are no firsthand experiences. And when you have also a building that has been uninhabited for a long period of time, as the Gans House was, unstaffed locations, places that have been abandoned, that means you're not getting a lot of firsthand accounts either. Because normally when you go into a place, you have a story, or somebody will say, well, you know, I was walking through here. The owners usually have some kind of story. In the case of the Seneca Falls Machines building, the owner's son had an experience in the factory that we were able to kind of go off of. But at the Gans house specifically, there are no firsthand accounts either. So you have no previous evidence, no firsthand accounts. There's nobody to interview because the building's been abandoned. It was a boarding house from the 1800s, which, again, poses another set of problems because hotels and boarding houses from that era are very difficult because, you know, records weren't specific. There weren't databases. There was no Microsoft Excel in 1860 or 1940. None of that existed. So a lot of that stuff just didn't survive to the present day. It either got destroyed, it either was lost to history, or it didn't happen. And when you don't have any kind of records of who was there, you also don't have any records of anybody who died in the location. For a paranormal investigator, knowing who passed away in a location is valuable information. It gives you something to go on. It gives you a name. It gives you somebody to ask about, somebody to ask for. In this situation, and in these situations where there's nothing to go on, you don't even have that. So how in the world do you even start when half of what being a paranormal investigator is doing research? We talked about this an episode or two ago. There's a difference between ghost hunter and paranormal investigator. And the paranormal investigator, part of it, you have to do the research. Well, there's no research to be done other than just the general what the building used to be and what could potentially be there. So, before the investigation even starts, what do you do? Well, as I've stated before, you know, we're not the TV shows. We're not paranormal television. We don't get 3 days in a location. Generally, the first time we go in there is the day we investigate. And the only information, and I'll use the Gans house again as an example, was a YouTube video somebody made where they trespassed illegally. And that's not helpful. And don't ever do that. And that's idiotic to do that. Those folks, you know, there's legal reasons not to do that, as well as safety reasons. So we drove by it the day before just so we knew where it was. And we looked at the outside. We didn't go in. So when you go in there, that walkthrough becomes something that's really important. And when you do that initial walkthrough, it's kind of like fishing. You kind of have to troll around in fishing terms, meaning, you know, move very slowly and see if you get a bite somewhere. And that walkthrough prior to the investigation is always important. It's even more important when you don't have records of death, when you don't have staff to interview. And we did as much research as we could. Luckily, we had members of the Historical Society there who knew a lot about the history of the building, being that it was a boarding house that a lot of the folks who worked in the fancier hotels in Sharon Springs would have occupied. But other than that, I mean, you do your walkthrough and you try to get a feel. But one of the other parts of the walkthrough that are important is making sure, A, you do it during the day, and B, that you're not just looking for some of the EMF stuff we're going to talk about in a second, but also looking for safety concerns. The Gans house, not so much, but for example, I mentioned the Seneca Falls Machines building. There were holes in the floor, like big holes in the floor, like Buick-sized holes in the floor. And if we had just been in there at night the first time, I shudder to think, because it's dark and we are very careful. And the folks who own the place did have some of it taped off, but not all of it. So walking through and knowing, you know, the safety issues of a building is very important. Knowing what, you know, staircases are rickety and where the railings are and if there are holes or structural integrity issues in some places. That's really important to do. And in unoccupied buildings, it's something that becomes extremely important. If it's a business that's owned and operated and running, I'm not looking for holes in the floor, you know, at Finger Lakes Community Action or the Omen Theater or something like that. I am looking for holes in the floor in an uninhabited building, and I'm looking for structural integrity issues in an uninhabited building. When you do that walkthrough, Getting that EMF baseline is important. Electromagnetic energy, in theory, can be spiritual activity. We have found it to correlate to spiritual activity. When we have our electromagnetic energy detectors and they go off, we have found that there is a correlation. But not all electromagnetic energy is paranormal. And when you've never been to a building before, you need to walk through and kind of get an idea of a baseline of what that energy will be, because not every place is a zero. Now, the Gans house had no power, so that should baseline as a zero. There were some outside power lines, but our equipment is sensitive, but the range is not that big. So we never worry about that because it doesn't pick it up. But in a place that does have power, for example, where I'm doing this podcast from in our office, if my baseline in here isn't going to be a zero because there's a lot of electronic equipment in here. And when you go through a building with power, for example, you do want to see, well, I'm getting a spike here. How close am I to the wall? Is there something behind here? Is there an outlet? Is my phone too close? So doing that kind of electromagnetic survey of the whole building gets you that baseline. Again, the Gans house was pretty easy because that baseline is zero. You also want to look for temperature, non-paranormal temperature reasons. And again, this is another good reason to do this during the day. It is a lot easier to see if there is a cracked window, a broken window, an open window, and to be able to see and debunk these things before you even need to debunk them. For example, again, the Gans house, some of the windows were cracked, and cold spots were unfortunately not going to be something that we could go off of because it was very drafty and very breezy. And if you watch the video at the beginning, you'll see some of the folks we were with. They tend to get more bundled up as the video goes, like the hoods come up, and because they got progressively colder as the night went on because of the fact that the windows, not all of them were there, and those that were there, some were cracked. So cold spots were out, but we knew that because we had done the walkthrough. You know, and if you feel something in an area, the more we do this, the better we've gotten at kind of feeling an area. Your body's the best tool for paranormal investigation. I've said it a lot on the podcast, and I say it constantly when we do events, is your body feels this stuff. And the more you are exposed to it, the more you feel it. And if you feel something, we'll pull out a digital recorder. We'll do an EVP session to see if we find something. And sometimes we do, sometimes we don't. But if we do find something, at least it gives us something to go on. And these ways, getting that baseline, looking for electromagnetic spikes, looking for any and all chances of, hey, maybe there is something here. It's the only way we have any idea where to put our cameras. We use stationary cameras. We use a lot of stationary cameras. We'll put the cameras up in places we're not around because a lot of time that stuff happens when we're not around it. And in a place that's never been investigated before, it's a guessing game a lot of the times, because even the stuff I've talked about doesn't always give you anything. And, you know, it's funny, as we've done more of this, and as I said, we've gotten a better feel, even though you're kind of guessing with camera placement, we have gotten a lot better at putting the camera in the right place based off what we're feeling and some of the other things we've talked about, but it's still hit or miss. And that pre-investigation prep, totally different in a place that's never been investigated. I wouldn't say it's that much different during the investigation, except it's more of a process. It's more, again, fishing. You know, most investigations, at least how we do it, is top to bottom or bottom to top. I don't know why we do it that way. I think it's just, you know, I think it's my OCD mind, maybe. We either start at the bottom or we start at the top and work our way up or down. And we investigate every single room because you never know. Even in places we know there's never been anything, we've actually captured stuff in rooms that aren't supposed to have paranormal activity in doing that. But you take it a lot slower when there's never been an investigation there before. You have to give the location time. You have to give the spirits time to warm up to you. Dealing with the dead isn't that much different than dealing with the living. And When you first see somebody you've never seen before, you're likely to be shy. And that's why when we do a first investigation, a lot of that evidence that we're going to get is going to be from further away from us. Those stationary cameras are, they're invaluable at a first-time investigation, because most of what we capture is going to happen from further away from us than closer to us when we first come into a place. Because honestly, I think the spirits are just trying to gauge who we are, and they're being shy. But the other thing that it affects is how you talk and how you ask questions and how many questions that you ask. We're firing a lot more generalized questions in an investigation that there's no previous, because we don't know. We don't know what we're looking. We don't exactly know who we're talking to, and we don't exactly know what we're looking for, and we don't exactly know what they want to talk about. And you're going to try to establish something. We ask questions a lot in present tense. When you do paranormal investigations, we tend to get more results on present tense questions, because sometimes we've found spirits aren't necessarily aware of time, or the way they deal with time is different, you know, than how we do it. I wish I understood it, but nobody really does. And we'll ask questions in present tense and in past tense, because you never know. And we're going to try to also establish an era. Like, what does this room look like to the spirit? Where is the spirit in the grand scheme of things? We'll ask about the colors of the walls. Sometimes we know that information, and that'll help us establish it. One question we've been asking more is who the president of the United States is. And that's an interesting one. I learned that one from Clifton Paranormal, actually, who we interviewed several episodes ago. That was a question that I believe Ariel came up with in their group, and I've used it a lot. And actually, at the event that we did at Hyde Hall in October, we asked that question, and the answer came back: James K. Polk, who was president from 1845 to 1849, which is the heyday of Hyde Hall and the Clark family. So you never know what you're going to get with that question. And that was an awesome response. So we do that. We'll ask the names of places, the names of other buildings in the town. Sharon Springs had a lot of famous hotels. So we're going to ask those kind of specific questions, but you're just doing it in such a broad way, because you have no idea who you're talking to. It could be a man. It could be a woman. It could be the owner of the hotel. It could be the spirit of a vagrant. It could be anything. And you know, one of the things that you try to do is especially when using like Spirit Box or Phasma Box, which are real time, and those are really handy in an investigation where you've never been before, because that real time instant reaction, it shows the spirits that you can actually hear them and they can hear themselves. And I think it spawns more interaction, because it's like, oh, wait, these folks actually can hear us. I mean, these spirits are talking all the time. I always think to myself when I go places, like, how often are the spirits trying to talk to people who just don't have the either inward ability or the equipment to hear them? But when they can hear themselves through the equipment you're using, we find that that teaches them, oh, wait a minute, these folks actually can hear. I just heard myself say that. So if you're asked to do something, if you're asked to go somewhere specific, do it within reason, but do it because that shows that you can hear them and that you will respect them enough to act on what they're telling you to do. And as with the living, that kind of respect goes a long way. And during that investigation, we do a lot more of that. With the real-time stuff because of that, because we want to show the spirits, hey, you know what? This is a little different than just the carpenters or the folks coming through or back when the building was empty. We're going to be able to hear you, and we care to hear you, and you can tell us your story because we want to hear it, and it will be told. And that's really, really cool when that happens. Also, during the investigation, it's important to use different investigators, different people. Gann's House, for example, we were very fortunate to have some members of the Historical Society there. And you have to try different people anyway. That's why Emily and I are so thrilled when it's not just Emily and I. Because dealing with the dead is not that much different than dealing with the living. Some people like some people better than others. Most people like Emily better than me, living or dead. There's a good reason for that. But when you have different people with you, you can hand off the spirit box to one of the folks from the store side. You can hand it off to Tim or Tracy or Rhea or Margo or any of the other folks who investigated with us. And some folks will get more of a reaction than others. And this happens in places that we've had a lot of experience investigating, but also in a place that's brand new, you might find that the spirits like one person more than the other for whatever reason anyone likes somebody more than somebody else, living or dead. It's also important to use as much a variety of equipment as you possibly can. We are tech-based, so we have a lot of equipment. But the reason is, again, just like with people, you don't know what tool or what piece of equipment the spirits are going to have an easier time using, or which one it's going to take them less time to learn. It doesn't get talked about enough, but the spirits, they have to learn how to use this stuff. Like, it doesn't just like, oh, hey, here's the ovulus device. Here's a phonetic generator that throws words out. Here, just pick a couple. It's not that easy. Like, again, just like living people, different people have different aptitudes when it comes to using these kind of things. I'm amazed at how good the spirits actually are at using these devices. But again, the first time we go somewhere, it's hit or miss when it comes to whether or not they use that equipment and communicate with it well. You also have to give specific instructions on what to do. The spirits in a place you've never investigated, they don't have the experience. They don't know. First of all, one of the owners of Grapevine who investigates with us, he has this thing where he tells them to interact with it, but he'll name the device, and we, and Tracy, his wife, and the rest of us, we'll correct him and say, Tim, they don't know what a K2 is. But you have to be very specific. Say, hey, I've got the thing in my hand with the green light. If you touch that light, you can make it change color. That's a very general way of asking them to interact with a piece of equipment. Hey, this thing in my hand, digital recorder, but you can say, if you talk to this orange light from this thing in my hand, we will be able to hear you talk. It's basic, but especially when the spirits are new to you and new to the equipment, as many different things that you can use to get a response or to get them to talk to you, the better. The more, the better. And we bust out the entire arsenal in a place that's never been investigated, because you just never know. But the differences don't end when the investigation does. The review process, it is different. It isn't slower. It takes just as much time, but it's very much more hit or miss. Because you don't know where to put the cameras, it is so much more likely that you're going to put them in a place where you're not going to capture anything. And one of the things I say a lot at our events is everybody wants to be a paranormal investigator until they have to stare at 6 hours of video footage of a room where nothing happens. I honestly think that's why you don't see a lot of published evidence, because reviewing the evidence can be a very time-consuming, and it can be monotonous. I find it exciting, but even I, sometimes, like 4 hours into a camera that captured no evidence, I'm like, what am I doing with my life? So people who aren't as passionate about it, I think that's where a lot of folks don't publish, and why it's so much easier just to carry a recorder with you. We've chosen to do it the way we do it. They've chosen to do it the way they do it. 10,000 groups doing it 10,000 ways, not a problem. But when you are a group that uses a lot of cameras like us, yeah, it's very hit or miss. And you also have to learn the audio and visual quirks of a location. And like, for example, if you're in a town, you're going to have a lot of cars driving by. I always joke that I can tell a car driving by just by the wavelength it shows on my editing equipment. And that's a very real thing. You have to know that. Some buildings have unusual quirks to them. I'll use Bull's Head Inn in Cobleskill, New York, as a good example. They're downtown, and there's a street light with a walk, don't walk sign that beeps when it's about to change over. And I can't tell you how many times we had to hear that as we reviewed the evidence. And you have to learn those quirks. Old buildings tend to settle. You have to be able to differentiate what is the building settling versus what are footsteps walking up on you. It can be difficult, especially with only one investigation, but, you know, you try. You try to figure it all out. You look for the headlights. You never know. Now, thankfully, the Gans house, for example, was not necessarily on a main drag, but when you put a camera in a place, you have to, you know, you don't think about, like, what every headlight angle could be. And it's easy. It's easy to determine if it's a car going by or if it's headlights. It's just time-consuming because you have to check every single one. And if you don't know, you know, what's what at first, it just makes that process longer. The other part of the review session that's different is when you have nothing to go off of, our evidence is the first captured evidence. It's the first time these spirit stories have been told. And we have a responsibility as paranormal investigators to get their story as right as possible because we publish everything. And, you know, with one investigation to go off of, that's difficult. And we're bound to be wrong. We're not going to get it 100% right because we don't know their story. But we have to represent their story and their names in the way that they said it to us. And, you know, the first investigation is just the beginning of the story, not the end. But when you publish that for the first time, you're not going off of anything other than what you have. And when we do the videos and when we try to put that story together, it's a lot trickier when we get a bunch of names and that we have nothing on those names to go off of. Hopefully, in subsequent investigations, you're able to, in between the first and the second and whatever many times you go there, that you're able to put some of those pieces together and hopefully know who you're talking to. And we're working on that, especially in the case of the Gans house. We are working on that. And you're never going to get it 100% right when you investigate a new location, no matter what, before, during, or after. But, you know, if you take it a little bit of a different approach, if you go a little slower and you're more methodical with your walkthrough, your questions, and your equipment, you're going to have a much better chance to get off on the right foot with these spirits, and in that case, hopefully make them want to talk to you more. So I've talked a lot about the Gans house in today's episode, and that's because we just did that event where we did the live reveal, link in the description, and the video for that investigation, link in the description, came out early last week, and it was an amazing investigation. It was... I love that location. And that location, we kind of knew, sometimes as an investigator, you know, like a half hour in, that okay, this is going to be interesting. And it got really interesting, especially at the end, with an experience that Tim had that I told him the other day. I saw him recently and I said, you can investigate for the rest of your life. That'll never happen again, probably. That is one of those once in a lifetime things, and I can't believe we caught it. And we'll talk a little more about that. We'll also talk about something we haven't published from it. But the thing that I came away from that investigation were the names. We got 8 names or something like that. And some of them, it was interesting because some of them were Russian names, which is interesting because that was a very Russian Orthodox heavy area when the Gans house would have been at its peak. So we also caught some voices that kind of sounded like they had some Russian accents, even though they weren't totally clear. You know, you could hear the accent, but you couldn't necessarily tell what the word was when it came through the phasm box or the spirit box. But those names really stuck with me. And in the video, we actually keep a running tab on those names because we do want to look into those more. And it was the quality of the evidence was really good. For a first investigation, the EVPs were loud and clear. I had very little trouble discerning EVP and what it was trying to say. These were not whispers. We got some very, very clear, loud voices. And they obviously wanted to talk to us. And the spirit box voices were very clear. And the phasma box voices were very clear and extremely intelligent. responding to us, responding to what we were doing. And also with those voices and with that evidence came a lot of light anomalies and a lot of activities around that. Those light anomalies, that energy that just is in the air. And those light anomalies are the closest we ever get to actually capturing an apparition on camera. And some places have a lot of that, some don't. This one, and what's interesting was it happened around where we were and happened around us, which means the energy was following us around as we went around the building. But if you watch the video and or listen to that the event that we did on YouTube, the experience we had with the structured light sensor camera, the SLS, at the end of the video and the end of the investigation with Tim in that bathroom, it was amazing. The structured light sensor camera it uses Microsoft Kinect technology, and what it does, in much in the same way you can control video games with your movement, that was that technology that started that. Well, the paranormal community realized that if that camera senses something with enough substance in front of it, it will map out the figure that it's sensing, even if we can't see it with our own eyes. That's how sensitive it is. And the reason it's like that is it sends out about 3,000 infrared, you know, beams of light out of it. And when you watch any video with an SLS, you'll see them as little dots on your screen. If it senses anything within there, that's how it draws the figure. It senses any kind of non-flat surface or anything of substance, so on and so forth. We've had some luck with this camera. Now, when you get an SLS figure, the first thing you want to do is establish that it's not a glitch, because glitches happen. It's tech. It'll map in real people. But occasionally, if there's something, it'll artifact, or if it sees something, and it happens. It's technology, and we ask whatever we see to do something intelligent. I usually ask move arms, move legs, things like that. This figure that Tim was with did several things right after we asked it to. We asked if it could grabbed Tim's hand, and it did. And then right as the figure grabbed Tim's hand, we caught a voice on the Phasma box saying, "Your hand is cold," which is absolutely incredible. That is validation of what's going on. But then we asked if the figure could stand up. And it's interesting, in the video, you can actually watch its legs trying to stand up, but it does stand up. And then we asked if it could give Tim a hug, and this figure stands up, moves over, and appears to sit on Tim's lap. And it stayed there for about 10-15 seconds and then went back to the spot on the floor where it originally manifested. And a couple minutes later, it was gone and never came back. That whole experience lasted about 3 minutes, 4 minutes. But what an experience. And I've never seen anything like that through the SLS camera. And it was powerful. Tim is still trying to figure it out. We showed him the footage after, and he was just, I mean, we were all very excited that it happened, and it's an incredible experience. I'm a little jealous, actually, because it happened, as an investigator, you want that to happen to you, but I'm so glad that Tim had that experience, and it's something that'll stay with him for the rest of his life, and if you watch the video, you'll see why. You'll see why that'll stay with him. It was very powerful. And go check that out. There was an image caught by the SLS. There were two images we caught. I was with I had that camera out for about an hour and 15 minutes or so. We caught two images, both of them in that general area. I did not publish, nor did I discuss yet, the other image we captured. And the reason why is I want to learn more about it, out of respect for whom it might be, because the image, at least on the SLS camera, looked very much like a figure that was hanging from the ceiling by its neck. It looked like, you know, if you'd ever seen a photo from the Old West of someone in the gallows who had just recently been hung, that's exactly what it looked like. And I didn't talk about it at the event because you never know who's watching that stuff. It can be a little disturbing. I didn't want, you know, kids to see that. And I also didn't want to talk about something I didn't fully understand. If somebody has had committed suicide up there, I want to know more about that, and I want to ask more about that before, you know, as I said before, it's our responsibility to tell their story as responsibly as possible, and I just didn't feel responsible publishing that. Would it have been good for clicks? Probably, but that's not what I'm here for. I want to learn more about that spirit before we talk about that image, because it's a chilling image just to see that figure motionless and stiff at that angle, hanging from the ceiling. It was very powerful to see that. There were a couple of folks from the Historical Society that were standing behind me. They saw it too. So maybe more to come on that one. Out of respect for that spirit, as I said, I haven't published it and haven't talked about it. I plan to, but I want to learn more about that spirit before we put that out there, because I want to be respectful about that. That's a whole different thing. But the thing in the bathroom with Tim and the kid and grabbing the hand and sitting on the lap, some of the most compelling paranormal evidence I've ever been a witness to. And again, a little jealous that it happened to Tim and not to me. But, you know, I'm just glad it happened to someone in our group. And it was great. It was great footage. It was great evidence. And it was an amazing investigation. Please, if you have not, go check out that investigation. YouTube, Facebook, the YouTube link will be in the description. And check out Tim, that amazing experience at the end, especially, that Tim had with that with the SLS figure on the second floor. And that Gans House video, that's our last investigation video of 2023, and I dare say we went out with a bang. We finished up on an amazing investigation. It's not our last investigation of the year, but the one we're doing in a couple of weeks, which I'll talk more about in another episode, is that video is not going to come out before the end of the year. So the Gans House will be our final investigation of 2023. And maybe in the next episode, we'll talk about a little bit about a year in review kind of thing. But we went out on a high note with this one, an amazing place. And, you know, I mean, the Gans House was a challenge. It had never been investigated before. And the spirits, you know, no doubt have much more to tell us. I'm certain we'll return there. To get more of their stories and more and just learn more about them. You know, and the next time, however, we'll have something to go on. We'll have the names. The evidence we captured will help lead us to learn more and know where to focus on and try to be able to marry the history of the location to the spirits and who they are. And now, you know, this time we'll just know more about them and, you know, where they are, where they tend to reside in the location. The next investigation we do there, for us at least, it'll be a little more normal. Thank you for tuning in, and we'll see you next time on the Paranormal Podcast.